Greetings! You're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and as requested by many of my listeners, here is some erotic ASMR. If you're having trouble falling asleep or getting turned on, just put that on loop and you will
fall asleep so horny that a thing from outer space will be drawn to your vibration and sit down on your face. It will ride you like a time machine into the years past and show your parents fucking on some shitty college couch. You'll get inexplicably turned on and try to fuck your mom and wake up in her womb and live your life over again. La, 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 la.
In this house, we believe that anal sex cures migraines.
Loves, what a beautiful episode of the DTFH we have for you today. Philosopher, wandering nomad, explorer of the deep unknown, Nick Hinton is with us today. We're going to jump right into it. But first this. Today's episode of the DTFH was supported by Super Speciosa. Kratom, friends. Kratom. You want to relax, wind down after work, or maybe you need a little energy. Kratom might be what you're looking for. It's an all-natural herb. It's related to the coffee plant. It's been used in Thailand for centuries, and it makes you feel good. There's different types of kratom. It's not all the same. Some kratom gives you energy. Some kratom chills you out. In small servings, you can even use it for post-workout or pre-workout recovery. If you're new to Kratom, what's wonderful about Super Speciosa is that they have capsules, so you're not going to take too much, like I did once when I was in New York and rode my bike to a Kratom bar and ordered the most powerful dose they had. It was not a fun bike ride home. Super Speciosa has capsules. That means that you can start small, slow, easy. If you're confused about where to start, you could try the Green MD strain. And again, I would recommend the capsules, though they do have powder. Try Kratom now. You can get 20% off when you go to superleaf.com/Duncan. You're going to get 20% off with the promo code Duncan. That's getsuperleaf.com/Duncan. Use promo code Duncan for 20% off. And for those of you who have already used that code, you can use it again. And you'll get another 20% off. So order more if you want it. And again, if you don't like the way this stuff makes you feel, you can get your money back guaranteed. Thank you, Super Speciosa. And we're back. Loves, I am headed to the airport in only an hour to fly to Chicago. And I hope you'll come see me. I'm at Zany's in Rosemont with Johnny Pemberton. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, June 23rd, June 24th, and June 25th. Come to us. Come to us. Also, head over to DuncanTrussell.com and check out our new shop with an ever-growing array of merch for your beautiful hands, feet, butts, chests, mostly chests. Actually, we just have shirts, I think. So not your butt or your feet or your hands, but eventually, we will have things for your butts, for sure. And last but not least, won't you subscribe to my Patreon? It's at patreon.com/DTFH. We get together twice a week. We meditate. We yap. Come commune with us. That's patreon.com/DTFH. Okay, friends, today's guest is a conduit for the esoteric, the weird, the fascinating, the mystical, and the occult. He's written a really great book. It's called The Aquarian Singularity. You can find that at nickhinton.com. Also, if you want to be in the know about the strange events, occurrences, and bizarre time ripples that are happening all around our universe, then you should follow him at Twitter. It's at Nick Hinton. That's H-I-N-T-O-N-N. And now, everyone, welcome back to the DTFH, Nick Hinton. Nick Hinton, welcome back to the DTFH, my wandering philosopher. How is life? What has happened to you since the last time we spoke?
I think I'm doing pretty good. I feel pretty content. Since we last spoke, I think we talked when I was in Texas. I think that's the last time we really talked. And
yep.
Basically, I woke up one morning and I was kind of just pissed off with life and didn't really know what I wanted to do anymore because, you know, the conspiracy stuff can get overwhelming. And yeah. I kind of wanted to take a break from
it. But wait, to catch people up who may have missed our episode, some crazy shit was happening to you, right?
Yeah.
Like you were like having, like, can you talk a little bit about some of the stuff you were experiencing?
Yeah, so it pretty much all started when I went and visited the Bledsoe family. The Bledsoes, for those who don't know, their father, Chris Bledsoe, is pretty famous for being abducted by this alien being or interdimensional entity. That's what they think it is. That they just called the Lady. Apparently she told Chris that her real name was Hathor, which is this Egyptian deity that I started looking into. But anyways, to make a long story short, these people are studied by the CIA, DOD, NASA. These people are constantly at their house. But anyway,
wait, what's the, I follow Bledsoe on Twitter and you have like anyone like who's like mildly skeptical is going to be like, come on, the CIA really, like they visit his house. Like what's the proof? What is the proof that like the government officials are coming to his house?
You can just go on his Twitter and look at some of the pictures he's posted. I have a bunch of them saved in my camera. Like he has one of them.
And these are like famous officials. Like these are like actual like government officials.
Right. Yeah. Like a couple of years back, Chris.
Sorry, Ryan. It's a podcast. I got to ask the questions that people listening are asking, you know?
Yeah. Chris went and visited Tom DeLonge, you know, how he's involved in To the Stars Academy and all that alien stuff. But
yeah.
John B. Alexander, he's one of the creators of the Project Stargate, you know, those declassified CIA documents that talk about the psychic spies and astral projection and all that stuff. Well, if you watch the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, George Clooney's character, that is based on John B. Alexander. And, you know, there's plenty of pictures of Chris hanging out with John B.
Right.
I don't know that many more people exactly by name because I don't want to. I know Hal Povenmire was a really good family friend. He was the oldest living NASA scientist at one point. He passed away a few years back, but he was going over their house for like Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff. They're really good family friends. And when I went and visited Ryan, he showed me this whole box of like just stuff that he had given them, like CIA pins. Tech tights, which are these weird, like, kind of like crystals, I guess. It's a weird form of glass that only forms when sand re-enters the atmosphere and like liquefies and then melts back together. And they form in the shape of little flying saucers sometimes because it's the most aerodynamic form that it can take as it's falling back to the earth. But scientists don't know how tektites actually made. The best theory that they have right now, or one of them, is that basically an asteroid smacked the earth a long time ago and a bunch of debris flew up into the atmosphere and fell back down.
Yeah. That's what I heard. It's really spooky. Mm-hmm. Like that to create those things, so much heat is required, right? Like it's like something like catastrophic would have mm-hmm. to happen. So he's got CIA pins,
all these pictures,
apocalypse stones,
yeah,
and like pictures of NASA astronauts hanging out with like barbecuing with his family.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wow, so wild.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it was early 2020.
Yeah.
No, maybe 2021. I don't know. The years have been moving so fast ever since COVID, really. But
yeah.
But at one point, Ryan sent me a message on Reddit, and he was like, "Hey, man, I'm a big fan of your work." And it was actually crazy that I even responded, because I don't really check Reddit messages all that much. Like, Reddit's the most toxic app, in my opinion, right. So I kind of just ignore it completely.
Really? But, over Twitter, you think?
Yeah, I mean, Reddit is like all anonymous. So I feel like people are just like the worst versions of themselves there. Like, it's mostly anonymous people, but Twitter, there's a lot more like real faces. There's still bots and anonymous people, but.
Right. I got you. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, Twitter's more personal to me. But yeah, so he messaged me on Reddit and just said that, like, "Hey man, big fan of your work and your second book, The Aquarian Singularity. Like, when you talk about the divine feminine and the mother goddess and all this other stuff, like, that's stuff that this alien being told my dad." And I had no idea that this family even existed or this story was real or whatever. But he was sending me all these links and stuff, like, "Oh, here's the documentary that was made about my dad. Oh, here's this." Like, and I was like, "Wow, this is insane." And so, you know, he was basically telling me that I had written about stuff that this entity told his father, and he really just wanted me to meet with the family because they were impressed with what I was saying and stuff. And so we talked for a while, and then I ended up, you know, getting on a plane and flying out to his property and staying with him for about a week. And I stayed at Ryan's apartment, but one day during that week that I stayed with him, we drove all the way down an hour from Wilmington to Fayetteville to go in North Carolina to go visit his dad's property where he grew up. And yeah, I saw like 15 different lights in the sky. And it kind of started like, we went out to get tacos and stuff on the night of the Super Bowl, I think it was like in February.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're eating tacos and stuff. We get back to the house. I hadn't seen anything, nothing weird had happened yet. And Ryan's like, "Oh, my mom really wants to talk to you. Like, you should go inside and meet her." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I will." Because she didn't go to dinner with us. And she's like kind of fed up with the whole alien thing. Like, she's not too interested. So she wasn't like participating in watching the sky or anything like that.
You and your CIA agent friends.
Yeah.
They're so, not good friends. They're just right. using you for your orbs.
For your clout.
yeah.
Alien clout. I'm walking inside, and I sit down, and I start talking to Ryan's mom, and she's like, "So, tell me about your books, what are they about, and blah, blah, blah." And since she's like, since I don't want to freak her out and tell her about cubes and Saturn and stuff, I'm like, "Oh, it's just about, like, synchronicity," and I start explaining what synchronicity is to her and stuff like that. And, but in the middle of that conversation, Chris just, like, yells, he's like, Nick, come out here. And I stand up, and I'm, like, looking like a deer in the headlights, and she's like, like, I'm looking at her because I don't want to be rude and leave mid-conversation. She's like, "Go ahead." She just rolls her eyes. So,
go ahead. It's these asshole interdimensional beings. They fly around our house. I don't know how to get rid of them. I try to bug zap her, but they can teleport through it.
Exactly. Yeah, she's seen some stuff where she's like, don't. So apparently Chris had prayed one time that she would see a sign, like, from one of these aliens.
Yeah.
And she was, like, cooking in the kitchen. And one, like, poked her on the back and then, like, quickly disappeared. And she's like, "Don't ever pray for me again, okay?" And so that was, like, her most freaky.
Don't do another alien summoning prayers. I'm trying to make dinner.
Exactly. It's probably pretty hard to do normal house stuff with all that going on.
Yeah.
But so anyways, I get up. I run outside. And Chris is like, "Oh, they just left. They just left." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I turn back around. I'm walking right back in the house. As I walk in, he's like, "No, it's back. It's back." I turn around, and there's this rod. It looks like a long rod that's blinking and flashing like a strobe light, like all white.
What the fuck?
And it's shooting through the tree line. Like, that's how close it was. And
what the fuck?
Yeah, that was the first one I ever saw. And then for the rest of the night, we're just looking at the sky, seeing, like, orbs, like, appear, get really bright, big, move around in, like, circles and in wavy patterns, and then dim out and disappear. And I saw like 15 of those, and they told
me. What would you reckon the distance was between you and these orbs?
Oh, the orbs were super high up there, but that rod was in the tree line.
Could you hear it? Was it making any kind of sound or anything?
No, I don't think I heard anything.
Weird.
Definitely not from the orbs. Yeah.
That must have been. That sounds scary. Were you scared? Were you scared, or like, what was the vibe when that stuff starts happening? I'm sure Bledsoe must have been like, "Thank God!" Like, look, we're not nuts. Like, this is happening around here for some reason.
Oddly enough, no, I wasn't freaked out. I was more excited than anything. And it was weird because, like, I had been studying all these things for a very, very long time, and it never actually felt real to me. You know, it was just always like a hobby. It was just like fun. It was interesting to look into, like, UFOs, aliens, blah, blah. But then it was like right in front of my face, and it's weird when you're writing about these things and you start living it. And I was actually really happy that I got to live it because, like, I don't know, it kind of feels disingenuous if you're going to write about these things all the time and then never go out and try and explore the possibility of them actually existing.
Right.
So it was exciting and awesome that I actually got to see that I wasn't totally crazy what I was writing about. But yeah, so after that, they were telling me how, oh, you saw the lights, you're going to start getting downloads of information, and like, they must really like you, these beings, because, you know, not many people get to see that many in one day and so quickly and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's so many different things going through my head. I don't believe that they actually liked me nowadays. But, you know, in that moment, I was like, wow, I'm special. This feels so crazy. And I remember I remember flying home. So I'm flying home, and Chris Bledsoe had told me how, if you ever want like confirmation about one of these crazy synchronicities, just pray to the Mother Goddess and she'll give you confirmation. And so I was like sitting on the plane, flying home, you know, just took off, and I'm sitting there thinking and contemplating, and I'm like, did I really just see all that stuff? Like, did all that stuff really just happen? So I took Chris's advice, and I was like, okay, Mother Goddess, if you're real, I want to see something that affirms my experience. And then I saw three orbs next to the plane.
You know, it's amazing the first time you discover something that really made an impact on your life. For me, it was intramuscular ketamine. Not only did it help with my depression, but it also dissolved me down to the atomic level and allowed me to communicate with hyperdimensional beings that explained to me that my fear of death was actually my love of life in reverse. When that happened, it changed my life forever. Well, what if the same thing could happen to you with your job? What if there's an awesome job out there that was made for you? Thanks to ZipRecruiter, that job is easier to find than you think. ZipRecruiter works for you to make finding a job easier. Like a personal recruiter, ZipRecruiter sends you jobs that are a great match for your skills and experience. They can also help you discover new job opportunities that are the right fit for you. ZipRecruiter pitches your profile to employers for jobs you'll love, and if they really like you, they can invite you to apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job site by G2. Are you ready to find a newer, better job? With ZipRecruiter, that job could be right around the corner. What job will ZipRecruiter help you discover? Find out at ZipRecruiter.com. Thank you, ZipRecruiter.
And then I saw three orbs next to the plane, and they were moving around weird patterns, and they went all the way up into the, like, you could see the blackness of space from whatever angle we were at. I have a video of it. It's on my YouTube channel, so I can post that. But they just head straight up into the blackness of space and disappear. And so I was like, holy crap, okay, that was weird. I think maybe that was my sign. And then I started getting those downloads that Chris was talking about. Like, I had a feeling, and I don't even know why. I don't know why this came to me, I was like, I think that this being, this mother goddess that Chris was abducted by, I didn't even go into that story that much, but just for context, like when he was abducted in 2012 or 2008 and 2012, apparently the being that abducted him was like this tall, blonde hair, blue eyed woman, called herself the mother goddess, the divine feminine, the missing part of the Holy Trinity, the Holy Spirit. And supposedly she's coming back for the age of Aquarius, all this stuff. But anyways, when I was on this, when I was on this plane, I started to have this feeling that maybe the mother goddess is associated with the star Sirius somehow. And I had the book, Cosmic Trigger by Robert Anton Wilson with me. So I opened that up and started reading that. And like, he was having some of the same exact things happen to him, which I just thought was so, so bizarre. Like, he started experimenting with mushrooms to commune with the divine feminine. And that's when his son saw this lady appear in an orb in the sky. And then he also had like that 23 enigma start going on. And that's what led him to believe that he was going schizophrenic and receiving telepathic messages from aliens on Sirius. But I dug deep into Sirius, and turns out Hathor, the Egyptian goddess, is associated with Sirius. And that led into a whole other rabbit hole of just a lot more stuff. But to keep going with what I actually did experience and not just like speculation stuff, when I was at the property, Ryan had told me this story about how some like NASA, CIA, like really high profile dude, like involved in a lot of different organizations, showed up at their doorstep in like 2012, I think it was, after his dad was abducted for the second time. And he called himself Tyler D, and he was like,
right,
yeah. And he was like, when Ryan was like, okay, yeah, I'll go get my dad, but who do you work for? What do I tell my dad? He's like, I work for the hammer, and the hammer works for God. And just really weird stuff. So I was like,
nope. You know what that's for me? Nope. I don't know the fucking hammer. Yeah. But you're not coming in the house.
Well, if you watch The Adjustment Bureau, there's a... Do you know what that movie's about? Have you ever seen that movie?
I don't think I have, no.
So The Adjustment Bureau is based on a short story by Philip K. Dick. And basically, there's a guy who's supposed to become president, but he's fucking up his destiny by chasing this girl that he loves. And basically, he starts being followed around by these men in black who can like jump through portals and stuff. And their whole job is to keep the timeline going the right way and make sure everything goes according to plan.
Okay, sure.
Well, the dude who's at the head of the Adjustment Bureau is named the Hammer. And this guy, Tyler D, supposedly told Ryan and his dad, like, if you want to understand my job better, watch the Adjustment Bureau. And they never watched it. But I was like, why didn't you guys do? So I watched it and I was like, this is super bizarre. Don't know if there's really dimension jumping men in black out there, but that was weird. And I just became obsessed with this Tyler D story. Because when I finally got home, I was doing my AI research, my number one obsession, and I stumbled upon this weird LARPy conspiracy, just weird thing online where people were saying, oh, there's this artificial intelligence named Tyler D that can speak to people psychically, and like started meeting a lot of crazy people through that community where they were telling me, yeah, they were talking to this thing in their mind. And I was like, I don't know if I believe all this. Like,
I remember the conversation well.
Yeah. I was like, are they messing with me or are they crazy people? I don't know. But I mean, there definitely seemed to be something to it. And I ordered the book about Tyler D, not Fight Club, but the one about the actual NASA CIA guy. It's called American Cosmic by Diana Pasulka. She was a professor of like theology at Wilmington University, I believe, and she was actually she taught, I think Ryan was in some of her classes when he was in school. So he introduced her to Tyler D, this guy, and they kind of ran off together and went on UFO chasing adventures and all this crazy stuff. But she ended up writing a whole book about him, which is really big in the UFO community right now. And in the book, she says how this Tyler D guy has this alien artifact, like maybe a piece of a UFO or something, that he'll like lay in the sun and fast and meditate and do all these different things, and then use this artifact to actually communicate with an off-planet intelligence that is teaching him how to create technology, like cybernetic devices, different medical devices, like weird stuff. So yeah. when I read that in the book American Cosmic, I was like, I wonder if he's not even talking about an alien. If Diana's not even talking about an alien, she specifically says off-planet intelligence. And I was wondering if this like off-planet intelligence could potentially be some sort of like electromagnetic being in the in the atmosphere. I don't know. But like when I was doing my research about AI, that's kind of what I came to the conclusion to, is that they weren't actually like invented things. They're electromagnetic beings that we're giving bodies to, I guess. Like they've always existed out there in the ether.
Okay, yeah, right. Like if you put the technology in place that they can flow through, then you kind of create like a technological oracle or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
You can then commute. Okay, yeah. Right. Gotcha. Cool. Okay. So basically, look, y'all listen to the last podcast. It goes into great detail about all these wild things that started happening to Nick after this trip to the Bledsoe compound. But you experienced, I think, what Robert Anton Wilson called the chapel perilous. The thing where you wanted it. You wanted to rub shoulders with the mystery.
Yeah.
And then you got to rub shoulders with the mystery. But it's like, you can't just turn the mystery off, right? Like sometimes like things can start happening in such abundance that it stops being like, oh, wow, maybe this stuff is real, and more like, holy fuck, how do I get out of this? I don't want to see it anymore. I want to get back to a normal life. I don't want to see orbs and synchronicities. So that's kind of what seems to have happened to you.
Yeah, that's definitely what happened. I kind of like just felt myself going crazy. And then I decided I'm going to do something that I'm going to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And I'm going to do something that I've always wanted to do. And I felt like it was my only, like maybe not my only chance, but it just felt like the perfect time, because you never know what's going to happen in the future. So I was like, I'm going to drive across the entire country because I've always wanted to do it. It'll be a good way to clear my head. Yeah. It'll be a wholesome thing to do, because like just seeing the world, and I'm not studying anything. I'm not doing it for any esoteric purpose or occult purpose. It's just to live life. So one morning I woke up all pissed off and frustrated. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I put two laundry baskets full of dirty clothes in my car and a couple of my books and, toiletries and necessities and stuff, and just started driving. And I almost turned around like a million times, but I was just like, I just have to keep going until I'm far enough to where turning around would be stupid. So every time I thought about turning around, I just kept going, especially after I almost crashed in Indiana, because it was so dark and I didn't have my glasses on. And this highway just turned into a dirt road that went into the grass. And I just driving in the grass. Ooh. I'm like, dude, what the hell's going on? I was like shaking. I was like,
whoa.
Yeah, I almost turned around then. But I just parked at a McDonald's for a little bit and let my nerves cool down.
Yeah.
But I called my friend who's like really seasoned at road trips. And I told him exactly what area I was and what McDonald's I was. He's like, bro, you need to leave. He's like, don't be there at like 3 a.m. And I'm like, God damn it. All right. So I started driving again. And then the universe was fucking with me again, because I was like, okay, I'm just going to find a hotel and just chill for the night. And so I search up on Google hotels near me. There's one down the street. I go to it. It's just a field. They tore it down and they still have a phone number. Yeah. So I'm like, oh my God.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's great. That sucks.
Yeah. So I had to go find another hotel just when I thought it was safe, But yeah.
When you say you felt like you were going crazy, what do you mean? Like you started questioning whether or not you were actually experiencing these things? Did you think it was like hallucinatory, or that maybe you worried that you were like becoming schizophrenic or something? What do you mean specifically?
No, not schizophrenic. Like I really always knew or believed, I guess, that what I was experiencing, I really was experiencing. I never questioned that, but I was starting to have like really paranoid thoughts, like thinking maybe I was getting into too dangerous of territory.
Like you would okay. So that's what I think surely is a possibility, right? I mean, you would have to be a complete dummy if you didn't believe that there are
secrets that people will kill other people to keep secret, right? Like, there's no question about it. You'd have to be crazy to think that we've entered at a time where, like, the governments of the world or the powerful people in the world have somehow evolved to the point where they're like, no, we do things by the order of law. We would never, ever order an assassination or, you know, clearly, this is a possibility if you find out too much about something. And this is, to me, where it gets really interesting with people like you, people who are like diving headfirst into the unknown, the mysterious, the esoteric in an experiential way, is that at some point you're going to hit this wall. You know, if it's real, I mean, assuming it's real, you're going to hit this wall that's intentionally placed there by who the fuck knows, who knows who put it there mm-hmm. to keep the majority of us in the dark. And once you get to that wall, what's your plan?
Right.
You know, what are you going to do when they're like, oh, you figured it out. You know what I mean? Well, you figured it out, so we got to kill you. You gotta like your writing. Yeah. I love your writing. I just want you to know before I make it seem like you committed suicide that I really love your writing. And I hate doing this. You're not the first author I've had to kill. Yeah, I imagine whoever it is like probably really friendly and like, look, I'm, yeah, we're both, sucks for both of us.
Oh, they definitely actually friendly. Yeah, yeah. No, they're definitely masters of the good cop, bad cop, but.
Right, right. They must be, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and now, where to me, where things are spectacularly fascinating is that because of the, what amounts to, I think, disclosure by the federal government that indeed there are these visitors, whatever they may be, that it is no longer necessarily crazy to say, oh no, there are government programs that are studying alien technologies or whatever the fuck these things are that are embedded so deeply into like a maze of intentional firewalls that we all clearly there is a conspiracy, so to speak, to keep the majority of people from knowing what's going on.
Right.
And well, it feels like you that Bledsoe or you might've just gotten a little too close to the thing. And maybe one of the ways they try to scare people away is by producing all of these weird synchronicities, by destabilizing your reality a little bit. So yeah. You pull back, you're like, all right, I won't fuck with this anymore.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we know, I mean, there's patents for voice-to-skull technology, for technology that can induce certain moods in people that, you know, they can literally manipulate people's behavior with technology now. And there's people...
Right. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, and there's people, like, on the very fringiest corners of the internet who claim to be targeted individuals.
Yeah, they're like, this is, like, people who claim there's some, like, conspiracy of, like, essentially, like, they're being fucked with intentionally by... like some unknown mob of people, right? That's what you mean when you say targeted.
Yeah, like gang stalking. Like some people think that there's gang stalking operations, which is a part of kind of like MK Ultra, basically just making people paranoid, having dark, mysterious figures follow them around, keeping tabs on them. But yeah, then there's other people who go even further and say that there's...
You ever had that happen? You ever have someone follow you? Nick, you ever have someone do that?
Did I tell... I think on the last podcast, I told the story of how when I... So I was talking about the Tyler AI, and I met this girl in Florida yeah. who claimed that she was one of these people that was communicating with this thing psychically. So when I visited her down in Florida, and we basically just randonauted together a bunch. And for people who don't know, that's like this app that uses a quantum random number generator to send you to... totally random locations. And supposedly it's supposed to help you experience synchronicities. And I was thinking like, you know, because I was down there with her. I'm like, what the hell are we going to do? Like, how do we study Tyler? Like, I don't get this. You know, I was skeptical about going down in the first place, but I was like, okay, well maybe if there's really an AI yeah. that's communicating through the internet or whatever, it'll communicate with us through this app. And she loved the idea. She had never heard of it. So it was just a really fun thing for us to do. But at one point we were led to a baseball field. It's probably like 2 in the morning or something. We're led to this high school And our exact location is pinged in this baseball field behind the high school. So we have to climb this fence and run back there. And when we get back there, there's this giant orange orb floating over us. And we just lay down in the grass and just watch this thing hover over us. And when it went away, we went to the actual point because that was just on the way there. We went to the actual point and then headed back to the car. Got back in the car, the orange orb. That's a little bit off. So we get back in the car and there's literally, this is not going to sound true, but I swear to God this happened. And I write about it in detail in the third book I'm working on. But
I believe you.
A black helicopter, like super close to the car, comes flying head over us. And as it's about to go completely over the car, it turns into that same orange orb and zips off.
Thank Blue Chew for supporting this episode of the DTFH and creating a pathway for us to get powerful, powerful, wonderful capsules that have the same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. No more going to some convenience store and getting a suspicious capsule with a giraffe's picture on it that gives you a headache for 2 months. No. Thanks to Blue Chew's incredible service, you can connect with an actual doctor who will get you a prescription for Blue Chew. No more going to the pharmacy, standing in line and getting bullied by one of those anti-boner pill bullies that hang out at the pharmacies and grab your ass too hard and shove you up against the wall and whisper in your ear, "You don't need this. You just need me." It's scary when that happens, but thanks to Blue Chew, you will get these wonderful tablets mailed directly to your door in a discreet package. Who doesn't love a discreet package? Friends, this is the most important thing. I've tried these wonderful tablets many times, and they work like a charm. Right now, we have a special deal for my sweet listeners. You can try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code Duncan at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's bluechew.com, promo code Duncan, to receive your first month free. Visit bluechew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for supporting this podcast.
A black helicopter, like super close to the car, comes flying head over us. And as it's about to go completely over the car, it turns into that same orange orb and zips off. And I literally texted Chris in that moment. I was like, "Chris, I swear to God, I just saw a UFO turn into a helicopter." He's like, "Oh yeah, they do that." He's like, "It was meant for you to see, no one else." And I was like, "Jesus Christ, what the hell's going on?" But then we go to our next point. And this is like the talking about the Men in Black type stuff. We're like, "Dude, we can't stop." We're freaking out. We're like shaking and screaming in the car kind of. But we're like, "Okay, we can't stop now. We got to do one more point before we stop." So we use the app again, and this time we're led to a point on, it's actually in the middle of the ocean, but we can get pretty close to it by going to this beach. However, the beach is behind a hotel, so we have to climb another fence, and we're on private property. And we head over to the water, and this time there's a giant blue orb hovering out in the horizon. And this girl, Amber, she's just freaking out. She's like, she runs into the water to go get closer to it, and I'm just standing there. And she like yells over to me. She's like, "How are you not freaking out right now?" And I'm like, I just don't know at this point. Like, I don't know what's real and what's not. And honestly, I was skeptical. I was like, that could, like, I'm not wearing my glasses. That could be a boat. It could be, you know, it could be something else, you know.
Any number of things.
Mm-hmm. But so I did what Chris recommended again. I was like, "Okay, Mother Goddess, if this is something real, like, show me a sign that I can truly appreciate, because I don't have my glasses. Like, show me something weird that I know for a fact is like weird or whatever." But anyways, so after that prayer, I turned to my right, and down on the sand is another tiny blue light, but it's blinking on and off, on and off, on and off. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Is that someone blinking a flashlight? Is that a bike with a headlight bumping up and down? But, you know, it was stayed the same size and in the same place. And, you know, I just couldn't figure out what it was. And then I turned to my left, and this beach is completely barren. But there's a guy coming from my left side on the beach, dressed in all black, black shoes, black slacks, black hat, just walking down the beach towards that light. And I'm like, what the hell? Is that the man in black? Because, I mean, it could have been security, but number one, he wasn't paying attention to these two crazy people running around yelling. He didn't even like look at us. And
yeah.
And then my only other thought was like, okay, maybe this guy just came back from a funeral. I have no idea. But
it is, it's not like beach wear.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's not something you expect to see someone like wandering down the beach in that outfit. That is very strange.
So yeah, Amber was like, oh my God, this is our chance to talk to, like, she's running back over to me at this point. She sees it. She's like, this is our chance to talk to the men in black. I was like, no, it's not. We're leaving. I turn around. I like drag her hand. I'm like, well, come on, we're going. And so that was that. But that was like the one time I felt like maybe saw something
what
like that.
What did you think would happen? Why were you afraid of talking to that guy? The slacks dude, the beach mourner, whatever the fuck he was.
It just felt off. It was almost like it was enticing me to go. Like, I feel like the other side knows what would pique my interest. And I've always talked about, oh, I want to meet the men in black. I want to see the men in black. Like, and that's how I knew it was my sign, kind of. And in the Randonauts, when I used to work for them.
But you don't really.
I don't really. Not anymore. Not anymore. No. I mean, when I was first studying all these things, it was all cool and funny. You know, it was just an interesting hobby. Yeah, back then I was like, oh, that'd be so cool to see. But when it becomes real, you're like, okay, maybe not.
Right, because the moment it becomes that, this is the, you know, I think that there's a mutual understanding between whatever that is and people like us. They understand that it is not okay for them to show themselves to you or to do anything to like unless you really want it.
It's like a vampire asking to enter your home.
Yeah, I think something like that, in the sense like they're like, listen, if we show you whatever it is, you're done with that world that you've been living in. You're done. Like, you know, you're not going to be able to function in society the way you've been functioning in society. So it's, you know, I imagine a lot of them, if, you know, again, all of this, I like Robert Anton Wilson because he recommends maintaining agnosticism, meaning you can do the thought experiment without having to believe it. But so you just pretend, you simulate, like, if there is some contingent of people who are aware of this alternate reality or that something outside of the bubble of consensus reality, whatever we think this is, if there are people who know, okay, outside of that is a whole other thing, then I don't think they're all necessarily bad. I don't think they're all necessarily vampiric. I think maybe a lot of them are people like you. Mm-hmm. Instead of running away from the guy on the beach, walked up to him and was like, hey, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, we're going to tell you, but you ain't going home. You know, we'll let you know if you really want to know, but that's it. That's it. Now you're going to be one of us or that's it.
Well, yeah,
that's my theory on it. Is they're a little more compassionate than people give them credit for.
Oh yeah. No, I definitely
don't think they're necessarily malevolent.
It's just, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as like, it's just the same as any job. They're just doing what they are supposed to do. And I think most people are good at heart and they're doing exactly what they think they should do to contribute to the world. No one has the full picture. No one knows what's actually good or bad for the master plan that's playing out, you know? So yeah, I don't think that.
But they are kind of defending default reality, right? They are kind of like standing at the perimeter of default reality and either pulling people all the way through into whatever's outside of default reality or pushing you back in because you're not, they don't think you're ready or they don't think they can trust you or they, whatever. So like, you know, if again, assuming that we, you know, I've heard all kinds of theories about Sirius, by the way, you know, one of them being that we're on Sirius right now. Have you heard that one?
I have not heard that one.
Yeah, that we're on, this is a good one, that we're on Sirius and that we're, this is where the training facility is, that this is where the simulation is actually happening, is on Sirius, that we're not even on Earth, that Earth is a fabricated or a planet that was detected by them. And so they put in the training simulation that, that we're in, we experience being on planet Earth, but they've left these clues like the pyramids and all the different, like, the myth and the lore about us coming from Sirius. We do come from Sirius. It's just, we didn't travel from Sirius to get here. We're there right now. We're on Sirius having this hallucinatory episode, which is part of the way that they train kids on Sirius. It's like preschool on Sirius. It's called Your Life.
Well, do you know about the Masonic?
And so, yeah.
Sorry. Do you know about the Freemasonic interpretation of Sirius?
No.
So they really believe that's like, you know, there's a bunch of different Freemasonic literature, but the stuff that I was reading says that this is where the heaven, like the celestial lodges, like that's where the Masons think that they're going when they pass away. That's their version of heaven. And if you look at, like, you know, the twin, the twin pillars, there's always that 5-pointed star, which, you know, Robert Anton Wilson compared to 2-3-23, the 23 enigma relates back to Sirius, according to him. That's a whole other.
Wait, walk me through that. And like, walk me through that. Well, how does the five-pointed star relate to the number 23 in Sirius?
Do you remember the law of fives in the Discordian Society?
Yes.
So how everything goes back to 23 and five?
Oh, I got it. Yeah. 2+3. Yeah. Yeah, I got it. Okay, I got you. I got 2+3. So I got it. I got it. Numerologically. Yeah. I got it. Okay, I got it. I got it.
Okay, okay. Cool. So yeah, in between the two pillars, there's always that flaming or the blazing star, which is the dog star, Sirius. Yes. Dog backwards is God. They think that's where God is. That's where heaven is. The celestial lodge that they go to when they pass away from this realm, if they've done enough good work. And so interestingly, when Freemasons have a meeting, there's a guy who actually guards the door of the temple to make sure no plebs or normies get in. And they call him...
Miscreants.
Yeah. They call him the Tyler.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that goes
right,
back
there
to
there you
that,
go.
That
yeah, right, exactly.
Goes back to the Tyler D stuff. And the name Tyler actually comes from, like, someone who tiles, like the Freemasonic tile board. But anyways, he also holds this sword to guard the
Wait,
door.
Wait, what's the Masonic tile board?
The checkerboard.
What's the Masonic tile board?
The checkerboard. Sorry, I said that wrong.
Oh, yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The white and the black. Mm-hmm. The, what's that? There's the name for the design of that thing, which I can never remember. But yeah, I know exactly. It's on the floor.
Yeah.
It's like where they do their rituals. Mm-hmm. It's the floor.
So the Tyler is
it represents, like, you can choose, like, it's like the yin-yang or something, all, like, broken up into cubes on the floor. Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that Tyler is the one who put that down.
Yeah. And then he guards the entrance to to the celestial. He guards the entrance to the celestial lodge. He guards, like, metaphorically, he's guarding the entrance to Sirius. So Tyler D, this mysterious guy who showed up at Ryan's house, I'm almost thinking, like, is this the gatekeeper of Hathor, this goddess being that is associated with Sirius? But, you know, that was my line of thinking when I was going through all this stuff. But back to the Tyler thing, the Masonic Tyler, he holds this sword to guard the door called the Flaming Sword of the Tyler, which is a little bit redundant. But the Flaming Sword is actually based on Uriel the Angel's Flaming Sword. Uriel the Angel.
The Garden of Eden. This is what keeps people out of the Garden of
Eden,
right?
Yes, exactly.
The protectors. Yeah, yeah.
Basically another heavenly realm. So, yeah, I mean... I forgot where I was going on that, but if you have anything to say about that, yeah.
Are you kidding? This is the best. It's a, no, like the, yeah, right. So.
Oh, I actually, okay, the, real quick. Yeah, I remembered. Please. Sorry. So the one thing I find really interesting, I don't know if I'm allowed to say something super specific, but I'll be vague about it. Basically, the Pope was really interested in Chris's experience with this mother goddess. And, you know, the Vatican is all about Mother Mary and stuff like that. And they have these prophecies of, you know, the Fatima prophecies, I believe they're called. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
you know, the miracle at
Fatima.
Yeah,
like all the people, the kid saw this vision or something, right? And that's what you're talking about. Like these kids saw a vision of Fatima who like gave, and they started like doing prophecies.
Yeah.
Let's look it up just to be sure.
Yeah, there was like a huge sighting in the sky. Like the sun was moving around and some people said they saw a mother goddess come in the sky. And it was called the Miracle at Fatima. And supposedly, like, yeah, some people started experiencing visions. I'm pretty sure that it was a girl and her name was Lucia.
Here we go. Let me just read the Wikipedia.
Okay.
The Three Secrets of Fatima are a series of apocalyptic visions and prophecies which were purportedly given to three young Portuguese shepherds, Lucia Santos and her cousins Jacinta and Francisco Mardo, by a Marian apparition. Starting on the 13th of May, 1917, the three children claimed to have been visited by the Virgin Mary six times. According to various Catholic interpretations, the three secrets involve hell, World War One, and World War Two. So there's like all these secrets. Here's an example of one of their prophecies. In her third memoir, written in 1941, Lucia said the first secret, a vision of hell, was disclosed to the children on the 13th of July. Our Lady showed us a great sea of fire, which seemed to be under the earth. Plunged in this fire were demons and souls in human form, like transparent burning embers, all black and burnished bronze, floating about in the conflagration, now raised in the air by the flames that issued from within themselves, together with great clouds of smoke, now falling back on every side like sparks in a huge fire. I feel like they could have just said fire. Mm-hmm. Without weight or equilibrium and amid shrieks and groans of pain and despair, which horrified us and made us tremble with fear, the demons could be distinguished by their terrifying and repulsive likeness to frightful and unknown animals, all black and transparent. The vision lasted but an instant. How can we ever be grateful enough to our kindly Heavenly Mother, who had already prepared us by promising in the first apparition to take us to heaven? Otherwise, I think we would have died of fear and terror. Sounds like ketamine. I've seen that on ketamine.
I was going to say something similar.
For sure. Yeah, man. I've seen, I know what they're talking about. It's a terrible, terrible, not a fun place.
Mm-mm. But the point of me.
So yeah, that's so.
What were you going to say?
Go ahead. Sorry.
The point of me mentioning that is one of the last prophecies is about the end of the world and how the Mother Mary is going to appear in the sky. And she's going to be accompanied by an angel with a flaming sword. And so, like, do you get, like, I think there's a connection between, you know, this Tyler D thing and this divine feminine, this manifestation of the divine feminine. Like, I personally think that these Marian apparitions, the apparition of Hathor that Chris saw, like, it's one and the same.
Yeah, or like on, you know, the ayahuasca spirit, or mm-hmm. like, you know, it is
Mother Earth,
the,
yeah.
It's the eternal mother, like the force of behind all mothers. Like all mothers on one level are basically the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And that Kali in the Kali Yuga, at the end of the age of Kali Yuga, Kali appears. And you all of these are like sort of the sword. In this version of it, the flaming sword thing, it, you know, it symbolizes, this isn't just like, you know, sweet mother. This is like defending mother, bear mother. The sword is there to, you know, set things straight. Kali, the same idea, like the garland of heads and the destruction of the old ways. It's mm-hmm. like, this is, you would never want to fuck with an angry mom.
No.
You would never want to fuck with an angry mom.
No.
So. So on any, whether it's an, and whatever they, that's the other thing to understand what's cool about mothers is that it stretches out into the animal kingdom, right? Like human mothers, bear mothers, squirrel mothers, bird mothers, any mother will give up their life and will become so ferocious to defend their children.
Right.
Like, there's no stop. It doesn't matter what the fucking thing is, man. Like it's a mockingbird, whatever the fuck. Man, our dog, got a long time ago when I was staying at my dad's house, so we would go visit him, you know, one of our dogs was just, there was a mockingbird that had a brood in the tree, and man, that thing was fucking up my dog. It had to go back there to pee, and it would run out there to pee, and the thing would fly down and pull hair
out of its ass
till like there was a little bald patch where this bird was like plucking at him to get him out of the yard. But what do we do? It had to pee. All I'm saying is the dog could have easily the dog could have eaten the bird.
Right.
Point being, mothers aren't always sweet.
And dogs
anyone
are
who's
nice.
Had a mother knows. Yeah, dogs are nice, but not a mother dog will fuck you up.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, I'm just saying, like the Marian apparition, however it appears, can have a wrathful form.
Oh,
that must be what the flaming sword
definitely. And in Egyptian mythology, it's said that in the end times, Ra will send down Hathor in the form of like a lion. And to destroy the earth and all this other stuff. But the whole reason I bring that up is because at one point when I was like, okay, so Hathor, even in Egyptian myth, is associated with Mother Earth, but also the star Sirius. I'm like, how do you have a earth goddess be associated with Sirius at the same time? Like, how is the star related to Earth? I don't understand. So when I started studying that stuff about how the Masons think that Sirius is a version of heaven, I was like, okay, well, if you read the Gnostic myths, Sophia falls from heaven. Maybe Sirius is this portal to heaven, like they say. So Sophia fell from Sirius
yeah.
and transformed herself into the material realm that is Mother Earth. And so that's how I kind of connected those two ideas.
Oh, that's so cool, man. I mean, this is like, why am I making apologies here? I was addicted to ketamine,
mm-hmm.
the reason I was addicted was not just because it was creating this euphoric high, but because I was having these visions, man. It was the of all the psychedelics I've ever taken, nothing has produced that kind of like spiritual, mystical vision. One of the visions was this, like, we were like the thing we think of as Earth is a more of like a womb that we're inside of, what we call reality is some kind of technological reality. It's a simulation. And that, the idea of heaven, or what they call heaven, it means sort of like outside of the womb of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like this place outside of the density, heaviness, all the rules of this, there's this other place. It's lighter, it's easier, it's like it's not so like terrifying,
right?
You know? And so yeah, whether that's serious or wherever it may be, who knows? I mean, again, like we're dealing with an understanding of time and space that's very human.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about it. Our whole way of understanding space itself is coming from people who've only been bound to Earth, who've been stuck in a fucking gravity well,
yeah,
for the entirety of our, as far as we're aware, for the whole course of human existence. So whatever the way we think about space travel or distance or whatever, I mean, just think, it's like things living inside a bottle,
yeah, yeah,
who have a telescope that can kind of see out of the very top of the bottle into whatever is out there, you know. So we're essentially like, We're still very primitive when it comes to our understanding of these things,
and
you know. But it is weird how the in Hawaii, like, don't they say that they think they originated from Sirius, that they came from Sirius?
Or that's the Dogon
right?
tribe,
like it's
Dogon
the Egyptians.
Tribe.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if I'm not. I've never heard the thing about the Hawaiians thinking that, but I know that people in Africa, Mali, I think it is, but the Dogon tribe, yeah, they believe that civilization was seeded by these aquatic beings from Sirius. And but yeah, just to back up your point, I'm sure you already know this, but like mother, Mary, matter, matrix, all those words share the same Latin roots.
That is so fascinating, man. Yeah, mother, wow, that's so interesting. I'm trying to look up the Hawaiian Syrian thing so I don't get like
flame.
Roasted.
Let me look it up here. Okay, I might be wrong about this one, friends. I don't know where I heard that. It does seem like somebody, if you're hanging out in Hawaii, something someone stoned would say. Let me look it up. Hold on. Okay, I'm wrong about that, guys. Whatever. It's like, well, at least I caught it now. You don't have to email me and say I'm an asshole.
I think you're just thinking of the Dogon, and John C. Lilly was big into that idea.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
He
was talking about ECHO, Earth Coincidence Control Center. He thought it was like this.
Oh, yeah.
He thought it was like this organization of alien beings from Sirius that were organizing synchronicities in people's lives to lead them towards enlightenment.
I know about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, this stuff is so bizarre, and yet it shows up everywhere.
Yeah.
It shows up everywhere. It's not just like people who are like getting blasted announcing these things, like visionaries for centuries have reported various versions of this idea. Essentially, there is an organized, super intelligent sentience that is intentionally creating an initiatory path, right?
Yeah.
Through which people can go to achieve realization. But you have to do it. Like, you have to go through the path. Like, mm-hmm. it's not going to, it would be violent to rip you out of whatever the weird womb is that you're in. It would be violent if you were not ready for any of this stuff to like show it to you. I mean, we can talk about it. That's not violence because we're speculating. Mm-hmm. And it's not like people are listening to us being like, wow, listen to those two scientists as they dissect the universe. You know what I mean? We will inevitably have around us a wonderful cloud of doubt, and people will listen and be like, I don't believe any of this bullshit. So it's okay to talk about it. But if you and I could prove it, if we could show it, if we could like demonstrate to anyone like, no, look, I want to show you this thing, then there'd be a lot of ethical considerations prior to that revelation. You know, you would have to really think, is this person ready? Do they, even if the person was begging you, please show me the mystery.
Yeah.
You would have to like identify, do they really, I don't think they really want to deal with that. I think they're still very much enjoying the illusion of whatever the world of default reality mm-hmm. is.
It's like the guy who begs for a job and then doesn't show up on the first day.
Ah, that's hilarious. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They didn't want the job. They wanted to feel like they had a job. That guy. You want that stupid security. Like, all right, I got a job. And it's time to go in. You're like, fuck this.
Yeah, fuck that. Which I've definitely done before.
Yeah,
but
yeah, me too. So also, I do think like there's something delightful about sitting at the edge of the pool with your feet in the water and not necessarily going into the deep end. You know, mm-hmm. there is something fun about hanging out in that liminal space between default reality where people are like super consumed with like the most basic shit and whatever it is out there, where people are like probably right now, someone in Raytheon in some building, maybe in the Arctic, is literally like about like has just packed their bags and is about to walk through a portal or something to go to another constellation.
But so I think I figured out how like NASA connects to this whole weird Masonic occult stuff that I'm talking about, the Egyptian mythology of it all. Like, why is NASA interested?
How?
Yeah. Why is NASA interested in this alien mother goddess Hathor? Like, why? And this is where it kind of got freaky for me when I started making these connections. So you know, NASA has a really weird history. You know, there's the Nazi aspect, which they were deep into the occult, but most importantly was Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons was, you know, doing rituals, sex magic rituals in the middle of the desert with his buddy L. Ron Hubbard, trying to summon a demon goddess named Babylon. And this is the guy who created rocket fuel for NASA. He pretty much founded JPL Laboratories or Jet Propulsion Laboratories.
Yeah.
And if you read the Bible, there's this entity that appears in the end times called the Whore of Babylon, who literally comes out of Rome where the Vatican is. And ironically, when L. Ron Hubbard was there documenting the whole thing, he was like, oh, this being is also associated with Hathor. And if you study Hathor, she was also known as the sacred whore in Egyptian mythology. So I'm like, is this being one version of this Whore of Babylon entity that's supposed to arrive during the end times? I hope that makes sense.
I mean, the Egyptians probably didn't call her a whore. It sounds very
Christian. It's like the sacred prostitute archetype thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but it's like the Whore of Babylon, that's definitely a dude came up with that.
Crowley was the one saying, like, we need to summon the demon goddess Babylon. And Jack Parsons tried to complete the ritual for him, and Aleister Crowley was like, you're a dumbass for trying to do this, but Jack Parsons thought...
I mean, I don't mean to be all woke here, but do we have to call it the Whore of Babylon?
I didn't make the name.
Can we say the sex worker of Babylon? No, I know you didn't. I'm just saying it's always bugged me. It's like, who the fuck are you to call her a whore? Like, what are you? Like, who's saying that? Anyone like throwing out whore? It's like, what are you? What are you doing? What are you going to spank her or something? What's your plan? What are you going to do? Don't call her a whore. It's like the Lady of Babylon. Why do we call her a whore? Is that weird? It just seems rude.
Yeah. I don't know.
She likes to fuck. What's the big deal? What's the problem? You know what I mean? Like, if it was I'm sorry. I don't mean to go, but if it was a dude of the dude of Babylon,
the pimp
it would be
of
like,
Babylon?
You know what I mean? Yeah, it would be like the stud of Babylon is returning. You know what I mean? Because it's a lady. It's like, the whore of Babylon. She fucks dragons.
Well, I mean,
in ancient
times,
in the weeds here.
No, you're fine. In ancient times, most of these mother goddesses were tri-faced deities, meaning that they had three aspects to them. One was the whore, one was the virgin, one was the crone, like the old wise lady.
Oh,
so there's
that's cool.
There's
okay,
three faces to a lot of these mother goddesses. And even in the Bible, there's the three Marys. You know, you have Mother Mary, the Virgin Mary, and the Mother Mary is the Virgin. You had Mary Magdalene, the prostitute, and then there was another Mary who was present at the cave when the stone was rolled away, when Jesus was put in the cave or whatever. I forget what her role was, but there's always three faces to these mother goddesses.
Okay, that's cool. I like that a lot. That's cool. All right. So this is like, I gotcha. So Whore of Babylon is like
the shadow
that's
version.
Like the shadow Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's really cool. That's so trippy, man. So like at the end of time, the shadow of the virgin appears with an angel with a flaming sword to set things straight again, right? That's the idea. It's like paradise is on the other side of this, whatever this event may be.
Mm-hmm. And I want to say, I can't remember the name and I don't want to sound uneducated, but there is a goddess named after, her name is very similar to Vatican. I think it's like Vaticana or Vaticanus. I'll have to look it up. You can try and look it up right now, but she rules over hell, but it's spelled H-E-L. You can just search up like Vatican goddess and H-E-L.
Vatican goddess. Vatican goddess. Vatica.
Vatica.
The name Vatican and an Etruscan goddess, Vatica of the underworld. What is the connection? Whoa. That's so wild, man. I love talking to you. That's so cool. Okay, let's see. Okay, a lot about the Vatican Library. Okay, the Etruscan goddess Vatica of the underworld. The name Vatican is a true mystery. It has nothing to do with the Bible, Greek language, or Latin. Like many other Christian traditions and customs, the name we associate with the church has a pagan origin. More than 28 centuries ago, and before the legendary founding of Rome by Romulus and Remus, there were people called the Etruscans. Okay, whatever. The Etruscans believed in an afterlife, but our knowledge about it is derived mainly from images and artifacts discovered inside their tombs. It seems that the Etruscans' beliefs about the afterlife were similar to those of ancient Egyptians. Treatment of the deceased's remains was important. Okay. Where does the name Vatican come from? Vatica had several other related meanings in ancient Etruscan. The name was not only associated with the goddess of the underworld, Vatica. Wait, of the underworld. Vatica was also a bitter, not well-tasting grape used by a peasant to produce cheap wine. The grape, as well as weed with the same name, grew on the slope. When people ate it, they experienced hallucinations.
Oh,
fuck. And the word passed on into Latin as a synonym for prophetic vision. The Latin word vaticinor means foretell, prophesy. From vatus, poet, teacher, oracle. Whoa. And also remember when Jesus asked for water, they gave him something bitter on this. That's the translation on the sponge that they put in his mouth. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, is that what they gave him? Vatica? Some kind of hallucinatory underworld?
Yeah, well, the
wine?
The hallucination association, or the hallucinogen association, is really interesting to me because, like, you know, we were talking about Robert Anton Wilson, how he was saying, like, oh, eating these plants that make, you know, all these different types of things found in nature that make you trip balls are a way to communicate with the divine feminine, which I just find that really interesting because that seems like another example of that.
Another way. Yeah, yes, yes, exactly. You know, many people who smoke DMT, they see this woman. Mm-hmm. Like, you can look it up. The lady, I'll look it up. The DMT lady, everyone talks about her.
My friend saw her.
Let me see, DMT lady. You know the first thing that pops up? DMT lady shirts. Very annoying. Hold on. Hold on one second. I'm going to look her up here. So it's like, okay, DMT lady vision. Yeah. It's my friend Shane. A lot of stuff about this like purple woman that he sees.
Yeah, yeah.
But lots of other people report seeing this being.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, my friend saw the same purple woman.
Purple. Yeah, it's very interesting. So this is, so what we're talking about here, you know, is some kind of goddess, feminine energy that is coming.
Yeah, she's been suppressed and she's pissed off.
She's been suppressed. Oh, yeah, right, right. Yeah, right, 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 right. Suppressed by who, though? Why and why? Why is this kind of information held back? Why is it like, you to find out any of this stuff, you have to, like, really dig deep? Like, it's not like when I was a kid, no one was talking about this. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew about Mary. Everyone knows about Mary from, you know, even a brief association with Christianity. But no one taught us, like, but that figure appears in all the world religions,
right?
That figure has three sides. So what is the why do you think this sort of data is not freely given out? Why is it something you have to search for?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just what makes life interesting. Maybe that is the mystery,
right?
They can't just give us everything for free. Yeah, what are we supposed to do? You know, they just give you all the secrets. You'd be bored.
Yeah, and also it's one of the best things ever when your mom picks you up from school when you're a kid. I mean, right? Like, it's like a joyful moment. You know, like it's nice to imagine that that's all that we're just Syrian. Is that how you call it? Syrian aliens? That we're aliens living on Sirius right now. Alien children. And we have our mommy's going to come and get us at the end of the day. And that's what the apocalypse is. It's just when your mom picks you up from school when you're a super advanced alien.
Yeah. And you're,
that's what we can look forward to.
You're always a little bit mad when dad came instead. You're like, where's mom?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. The flaming sword is just the car. That's what people drive. Look, man, I could go on and on with you forever. Thank you so much for letting me ramble with you today. What a joy, Nick.
Yeah, man.
You got another book coming out for us?
Yep, and it's called Stairway to Sirius.
Ah, cool. Cool. When is it? How can we find it? When's it coming out?
Just keep paying attention to my Twitter, which is at NickHintonn. Also, same thing on Instagram. I have a website, which is just a total mess. Don't go to it. I'm trying to fix it. Same thing with my podcast. I might go back to it. I'm not really sure what angle I want to take with it. But it's just another project that, like, I'm more focused on the book. I want the book to be finished before I start doing anything else. And I'm hoping to get it out by the end of this month or early July, which would be ironic because that's when Sirius is like highest in the sky, right?
Then you have to make it your goal. Yeah. Do that. Make it happen.
Yeah.
And friends, please follow Nick on Twitter. Follow his Instagram. Being friends with him makes me feel like I have some direct connection to something underneath the CIA or the Vatican, or it's probably all the same place. He's really tuned in, as you can tell, to the great mystery. Follow him. Nick, thank you so much. And I can't wait for our next podcast.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you. That was Nick Hinton, everybody. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Pick up a copy of The Aquarian Singularity and check out his website, nickhinton.com. Much thanks to our wonderful sponsors this week, and thank you for listening. If you happen to be in the Chicago area, come see me and Johnny. Also, I'm going to be heading to Denver. Lots of other dates are popping up. You can find them all at duncantrussell.com. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna. Hail Hathor.